So the first reading is on page 623 of the Pew Bible. So this is Psalm 124. If the Lord had not been on our side, let Israel say, if the Lord had not been on our side when men attacked us, when their anger flared against us, they would have swallowed us alive. The flood would have engulfed us. The torrent would have swept over us. The raging waters would have swept us away. Praise be to the Lord, who has not let us be torn by their teeth. We have escaped like a bird out of the fowler's snare. The snare has been broken, and we have escaped. Our help is in the name of the Lord, the Maker of heaven and earth. And the second reading is Ecclesiastes 9, which is on page 674. So I reflected on all this and concluded that the righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hands, but no man knows whether love or hate awaits him. All share a common destiny, the righteous and the wicked, the good and the bad, the clean and the unclean, those who offer sacrifices and those who do not. As it is with the good man, so with the sinner. As it is with those who take oaths, so with those who are afraid to take them. This is the evil in everything that happens under the sun. The same destiny overtakes all. The hearts of men, moreover, are full of evil, and there is madness in their hearts while they live, and afterwards they join the dead. Anyone who is among the living has hope. Even a live dog is better off than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. They have no further reward, and even the memory of them is forgotten. Their love, their hate, and their jealousy have long since vanished. Never again will they have a part in anything that happens under the sun. Go, eat your food with gladness, and drink your wine with a joyful heart, for it is now that God favours what you do. Always be clothed in white, and always anoint your head with oil. Enjoy life with your wife, whom you love, all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun, all your meaningless days. For this is your lot in life, and in your toilsome labour under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For in the grave, where you are going, there is neither working, nor planning, nor knowledge, nor wisdom. I have seen something else under the sun. The race is not to the swift, or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise, or wealth to the brilliant, or favour to the learned. But time and chance happen to them all. Moreover, no man knows when his hour will come. As fish are caught in a cruel net, or birds are taken in a snare, so men are trapped by evil times that fall unexpectedly upon them. I also saw under the sun this example of wisdom that greatly impressed me. There was once a small city with only a few people in it, and a powerful king came against it, surrounded it, and built huge siege works against it. Now there lived in that city a man poor but wise, and he saved the city by his wisdom. But nobody remembered that poor man. So I said, wisdom is better than strength, but the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are no longer heeded. The quiet words of the wise are more to be heeded than the shouts of a ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good.
Thank you, Andrew. You may like to keep both those passages marked, but I will be swapping around quite a bit. Let's just ask God's help as we look at these passages. Father, we do just pray that as we look at these passages, which in many ways are not straightforward, that you'll help us to understand them and that you will speak to us through them and help us, giving us the grace to respond for Jesus' sake. Amen. Well, of course, Andy's been going through some of the songs of ascent, as they're called, and there's 15 of them in all, and they may well have been songs that could have been sung as people were going up to worship in the temple. They are writing that doesn't deny the problems that are encountered by the nation of Israel, but they do recognise God in the midst of them, and in general they end with exhortations to trust in God or assurances that God will act to bring relief. Songs are often used in demanding circumstances, sometimes in boring circumstances. You get soldiers who often, when they're marching, might have a song that they march to. You aren't going to get away without any Star Trek references, so I'll tell you about one Star Trek episode in which Captain Jean-Luc Picard is trying to lead some young children to safety. They have to climb up a very long way on these steps, and if they misstep, they are going to fall to a rather nasty death. And he gets them to sing, well, what else could it be, Fera Jaca. Paul and Silas sing songs from a Philippian jail. In the midst of real suffering, they are actually singing and praising God. So these writings are important for us. The Psalms, in a way, are the hymn book of the Bible. And we've seen this morning that many songs are actually based on them, both ones that we sing in worship and ones that other people have chosen to set in a secular context. Psalm 124 in particular praises God for sparing Israel from great dangers. The language, of course, is metaphorical, but the danger was real. And the pictures cover a wide range of very unpleasant happenings, floods, jackals, and so on. It details metaphorically what would have happened to Israel had God not been on their side. The writer to Ecclesiastes is a bit different. But the writer is really struggling with what he sees in the world around him. It's interesting that one commentator entitles chapter 9 as Jeopardy, and another entitles it God's Fingerprints. And perhaps the difference is which side of life we look from. If you consider a tapestry and look at it from the front, it can be very beautiful. It certainly has meaning whether you like it or not. But if you turn it the other way round, no matter how beautiful the front of it is, the back is not a thing of beauty. It's not even a thing normally of order. It's all disconnected. Life, of course, must be lived forwards, but sometimes we only understand it backwards. We only see what God has done after the event. The Jewish festivals, for example, were there to remind the Jewish people of their own history, to remind them of what God had done for them. And we remind ourselves in various ways of our own faith. When we use the creeds, we remind ourselves of what we are supposed to believe. And when we celebrate the Lord's Supper, we remind ourselves of what is the most important event for us, the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. And we need these things because it's so easy to forget. But also how we look at and understand life determines to a large extent how we think of God. But it's interesting how the same event can have different effects on different people. I don't know whether any of you ever saw a comedy program called Drop the Dead Donkey. It was about a news outfit. And on one occasion, they're going to have this key debate between a bishop and a sociologist. And it's going to be about God and whether God exists and so on. And yet, the night before, there's a news report from Gaza, or rather from Jerusalem, and it shows pictures of real carnage there. And one of the pictures is of a mother with her baby. And the result in the story is that the bishop reacts by losing his faith, thinking that no loving God could actually allow that sort of thing to happen. But the sociologist sees such humanity in the mother and child that he feels no longer able to argue against the existence of God. And there are other examples in real life The events of September the 11th, 2001 were, of course, horrific, and many will have reacted in the same way as that bishop in that programme. But others who narrowly missed being there on the day because they were sick, because they were late, or for some other reason, and there were a variety of reasons. One person wasn't there because it was his turn to fetch the donuts, apparently. But they saw in that event God keeping them safe. Now, of course, the history of Israel involves a huge number of miraculous events, such as the escape from Egypt. The book of Habakkuk teaches us that God was at work in history even when things weren't so pleasant, doing the most surprising things. They're using the Babylonians to punish the nation of Israel for constantly breaking the covenant that they had with God. There are, of course, in the New Testament, many miracles in the life of Jesus and in the life of his followers as well. Miracles of that nature do certainly occur, but they cannot, in all honesty, be said to be the norm in everyday life. But the Bible does show us that God acts providentially behind the scenes. His fingerprints, if you like, are clearly visible in, for example, the story of Ruth. It is a God incidence rather than a coincidence that Ruth finds herself gleaning in the field of Boaz. The psalmist is right in seeing God behind events, whether in the miraculous or in the providential. But what can we say about Ecclesiastes? Has Ecclesiastes then just got it all wrong? Because some of those phrases, some of those verses we read, do seem a little bit odd. In answer to that, I would say no and yes. No, because what he's doing is simply looking around at the world and drawing conclusions. But I'd say yes, because his view of the world is incomplete. He doesn't know what lies beyond life. According to him, the dead know nothing. He's unable, even in this chapter, to determine God's attitude to the righteous and the wise. But, despite all of that, God is still there in that picture that Ecclesiastes has. Look at verse 7. Go eat your food with gladness and drink your wine with a joyful heart, for it is now that God favours what you do. Of course, the negative side is still there with his references to toil and to meaninglessness. And we've probably felt that way about life ourselves at times. But then again, in the final few verses, he commends wisdom. That poor man saving that city. But he tells us not to expect to be remembered for it. Not to expect gratitude for it. But if you want to have a sneak look forward at the end of the book, there's a clear indication that he does believe that God will ultimately distinguish between good and evil. Right at the end of the final chapter, now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including everything, whether it is good or evil. He was a man of his times. He could only see things in the light of what he knew. You've all heard of Isaac Watts, I'm sure. He lived a century after the famous gunpowder plot, and he called Psalm 124 a song for the 5th of November. And clearly the memory of that plot was still in people's consciousness even one century later. And some, Isaac Watts presumably included, saw the finger of Prince of God in the way that that plot was foiled. It's a matter of historical fact that it was in fact foiled at the last moment when a group of guards decided for themselves to check the cellars of the Houses of Parliament. And many see God's fingerprints in the way that the Second World War turned out. It could so easily have been different. And often what we cannot be sure of, what different decisions at pivotal points would mean in our own lives, in the lives of others. something called mathematical chaos theory. It tells us that in theory, the flapping of a butterfly's wings could lead to a tornado across the other side of the world. It may even be that what appears to be good to us may actually not have good effects in the long term. And I'm afraid you're going to get another reference to my favourite program here. My favourite episode of the original Star Trek series is an episode which envisages huge changes in history as a result of an accidental trip back in time, which results in a young lady called Edith Keeler being saved from dying in a traffic accident. She's a commendable person. She works with down and outs. She's committed and has a real vision for peace. And the plot supposes that because she is saved, a peace process takes place in the USA, which delays the entry of the USA into the Second World War, which results in Germany developing the atom bomb first and conquering the world. Now, of course, it's only fiction, especially the time travel bit, but you can almost imagine a sequence of events like that. What appears to be a good thing, the saving of a life, has in this case disastrous consequences. The point is simply that we cannot know the ultimate effects of our actions and what happens to us. Good now might not necessarily mean good in the future, and something bad now might nevertheless lead to something good in the future. So-called coincidence may be in some sense God's way of staying anonymous. Providence, as we call it, of course, has rivals. The world doesn't really believe in providence. It calls it luck. It tries to make its own luck. Lotteries and so on. And of course, science has advanced to the point where we can be tempted to think that we are actually in control of our own destiny. But of course, in reality, Ecclesiastes has come to the correct conclusion that the righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hands. One of Paul Simon's songs is entitled Slip Sliding Away, and interestingly includes the lines, God only knows, God makes his plan, but the information's unavailable to the mortal man. And generally speaking, that is actually true. We do not know exactly what things God is working out. But if that's the case, where do we go from there? What do we actually take away this morning from these two passages? I would suggest that Psalm 124 gives us something to look back on and a reason to be hopeful for the future. And that Ecclesiastes perhaps suggests a way of living in the here and now, in the midst of uncertainty and confusion. We read Psalm 19 at the start of the service, and that talks about God as the maker of heaven and earth. Romans 1 verses 19 to 20 read, since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal nature and divine nature have been clearly seen, been understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. We may not know the details of what God is doing, but we can see what he has done. We can be sure that he is there. These things make God's existence and his power clear, just as does the history of Israel. And when we look closely, of course, later history, and even our own history. Although Ecclesiastes could not be sure of God's intent towards us, it was there to be seen to a certain extent in the history of Israel. But with the coming of Jesus, God's love for us becomes plain and unmistakable. He sees every bird that falls to earth, and we are worth more than many birds. Even the hairs on our heads are numbered. The past record of God's actions, the times when looking back we can see his hand on our lives, should reassure us that the Lord is on our side. Romans 8:31, Paul says, if God is for us, who can be against us? He doesn't mean to say that nobody will oppose us. That would be absurd. People will oppose us, just that ultimately they will fail. we will have difficulties just as the psalmists did in his day. But if you continue to verse 39, Paul says that nothing in all of creation can separate us from our loving God. In the present, though, we still have to live. So what should we do other than trusting in God? I would suggest that Ecclesiastes gives us good advice in verses 7 to 10. We should enjoy what God has provided. Food, drink, fellowship. Always, of course, within the limits of common sense and what God has said to us. Verse 10 is, I think, particularly important in a world in which life does sometimes seem meaningless. Whatever your hands find to do, do it with all your might. Verse 8 may perhaps refer to doing all things in a pure and acceptable way. So we should surely use our particular abilities as well as we can. But perhaps we should also, when the opportunity arises, learn new skills, adapt to what needs doing. It surely doesn't mean that we only spend our lives enjoying ourselves and doing what we enjoy. There are certain roles in life for which there are not huge numbers of volunteers, and the same applies in church as well. Sometimes we may nevertheless need to fulfill those roles. The tale in verses 13 to 18 of Ecclesiastes chapter 9 also reminds us that our efforts will not always be appreciated or remembered, except, of course, by God. All the same, the author still commends the action, in this case sharing wisdom, in our case perhaps doing what we don't enjoy but needs doing as well as what we enjoy. How we go about things makes a huge difference as well. Our faith and our trust in God, our desire to serve him, should make a huge difference. After all, Jesus said he came that we might have life and have it to the full. I don't believe he was only referring to life after death. And the New Testament gives us a great deal of guidance, indirectly and directly, about how to live in the present. The life of Jesus, his concern for the poor, for example, should make us concerned about the gross inequalities in our world and in our own country. Poverty can, after all, be viewed both in an absolute and a relative sense. The parable of the man tearing down his barns to build bigger ones warns us against too great a concern with material things. Live simply so that others may simply live is a useful motto. And in Romans 12 verse 2, we are warned about being conformed to the world around us. Sometimes there's a lot of pressure to conform, but we need to be conformed to what God says, not what the world says. And our approach to the present is important, but we do naturally look ahead to the future as well, don't we? The future is, to differing degrees, uncertain, unpredictable. What will we do? Where will we be? How will we be? Many other questions are always there, even if only in the background. At the end of Psalm 124, we have an assurance that God is there for us. Our help is in the name of the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. In Ecclesiastes' time, the nature of existence after physical death was very much in doubt. And in Jesus' time, there were two groups, you remember, the Sadducees and the Pharisees. And the Sadducees didn't believe in the resurrection, and the Pharisees did. Jesus made it very clear, however, that in his Father's house there are many rooms, meaning that we will live as part of God's extended family. Our help is in the name of the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. It was in the past, it is now, and it will be in the future. Let's be quiet for a moment. Father, help us to remember that our help is with you, the maker of all things. Amen.